Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show, middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score. Reasonable, level-headed, informed sports talk for your workday. Dan Bernstein, Layla Rahimi.
MLB Now, starting today, is when umpires are going to be checking pitchers, going to be checking catchers, going to be checking position players. They're investigating and sniffing out all the sticky, icky goo that is being used to spin pitches at abnormal rates.
They have said that they're not going to delay play. They're going to inspect pitchers as they come off the mound between innings or at the end of their stints. So they check DeGrom's hat. They say they want to check his belt. He said, "Do you want me to take it off?" They said no. They check under the belt, and now he has passed inspection.
Before the half inning is over, Al Zelaya will have his hat inspected, and the umpires look at it and send him on his merry way.
He asked for his glove. They asked for his hat. Checked it all out, and everything was good.
You know what I like most about this? That's how respectful you is. Thank you.
He thanks them for checking it. That's awesome.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show.
With Bernstein and really Mahimi.
Middays, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Got to make sure we're locked in during the game. And
we're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Layla is on vacation this week, so it's just us hanging out between now and noon. We got a lot of baseball talk coming your way. That's going to involve Craig Calcaterra at 10 o'clock. I got some fun football stuff for you at 10:20. Midday Midway at 10:40. Joe Sheehan also has baseball thoughts and information at 11. Then at 11:25, Amy Dash, the Odyssey legal insider, will give us her thoughts on what could be in store for college sports amateurism and where it's going to go, because this relatively narrow ruling seems to be inviting plaintiffs to line up to use these same antitrust measures to strike down much of the NCAA's business model. And I say hallelujah. Absolutely. Amen to all of it. A long time coming. So we'll get to all that today and more surprises along the way as well. 312-644-6767 is the Score listener line. That's powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. If you want to email, that's Bernstein Rahimi at 670thescore.com. You go there to listen to us live because we stream at 670thescore.com. You can send a text. We get those in the text zone. Brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at RosenHyundai.com. When you text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein Rahimi. My personal feed is at Dan_Bernstein. If you want to follow me there for sports and non-sports stuff, we do it all and talk more sports. I don't know. It's a personal Twitter feed. I can do whatever I want. And we also have different ways that you can get in touch with the show. When you download the Odyssey app, you can stream The Score on all your mobile devices. You can interact on Facebook if you still are on Facebook and you haven't gotten rid of it yet, which you should do. There is our Twitch stream right here. This camera, these cameras all around. I don't know which camera is on at any given time. I just know that they are here and they chronicle all that we do. That Twitch feed is twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore.
You can join there in the chat that goes on. There is they're all people weighing in with their thoughts and things. Sometimes it's the show within a show. We share links and things that we talk about in that Twitch stream as well as on the Twitter feed. Connor O'Donnell and Brian Gertsch are in charge of the Twitch stream and moderating the chat. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer, and Jordan Malley is on the board. Yeah, the bias thing last night, you know, it's not really that big a deal. It feels like a big deal. Javier Baez benched because of brain cramp. You gotta do it. You know, I remember freshman year of college when our RA in Haynes' house on the first floor says, "Look, don't put me in a position that I gotta write you up. Don't make me do it. Don't be an idiot." He was really upfront about it, and he was really cool about it. And he said, and of course we didn't take his advice, but he just said, "Look, don't do bong hits in the middle of the hallway. Just don't. Don't make me have to."
420.
And that was one of those moments last night where Javier Baez made him have to do it. And it's okay. I thought he handled it just right. It wasn't one of these like Bobby Cox, you know, drag the guy off the field by his nostrils and embarrass him, or stand there with his arms crossed and fuming and trying to be it wasn't performative, I guess. So I think let's hear how David Ross explained why he did what he had to do.
I like to keep some of those things in house. I mean, I think it's, you know, we just got to make sure we're focused and locked in during the game. And, you know, sometimes our frustrations can distract us a little bit, and we had a good conversation, and I think that's behind us. You know, Javi's really important to this team, and, you know, he's a leader on this team and sets a good example every time he's on the field. And, you know, one of the guys that I rely on to, you know, set the a good example for all these guys who I think highly of him and his skill set. So yeah, I think it's just a little bit of lack of concentration. We talked about it, and that's behind us.
David, what goes into a manager's mind in terms of the timing of that? Why this moment to pull him out of the game like that?
I think it's just, you know, when you see somebody that might be a little distracted, you try to, you know, get somebody else in there and they can maybe focus and give that person a break. Maybe they're just grinding a little bit mentally and not all the way there, and try to give them the rest of the day and come back tomorrow refreshed and ready to go.
You think, David, if anybody else, young or veteran, makes that same play the same way, in other words, you see the same thing, it's just somebody else, doesn't matter who it is, do you think you suppose you make the same move there?
I made a move last year with a different player that was, you know, I didn't feel like was fully engaged at a moment. And I think that there's more that led up to that decision, maybe a little bit that you guys don't know about. But yeah, I think that, yes, if the circumstances were the same with anybody, I'm not trying to set an example of Javi ever. That guy plays his butt off and brings it 99.9% of the time. And so it's not about setting an example for a star player that's a big part of this team. That's not it. It's just, you know, let's get somebody in there that's fresh and let him regroup, and he'll be better for it tomorrow. We'll all be better for it. I think it's rare that Javi doesn't hustle or give his all. And yeah, that's a definitely a rare moment for him.
I think there's a lot going on here. And when he says there's some things that he wants to keep in house, there's a couple layers to this. And I think it's important to separate the layers. The first layer is it is an example, whether you say I don't want to make an example of him by being a conscientious manager. The example is inherent. There is some sense of that. It is punitive. There is something. Look, you put me in a position where you made a mistake you can't make. You got to come out. That's the oversimplified version is that. It's like, yeah, that's not excusable, and as a punishment, I'm removing you from the game. My best guess is maybe David Ross knows there's something else that could be contributing to Javier Baez playing distracted baseball, and he says, look, you're not all here tonight, and I'd rather have somebody who is take the rest of the night off because your head isn't where it needs to be. And that aspect of it isn't necessarily punitive. That aspect is in the best interest of his baseball team. And knowing that you can't give away an out like that, or knowing that there could be another situation where maybe he's, it could be an off the field thing. Maybe there's something going on and he's just, his head's not there. We've all been at work when we're being pulled in a bunch of different directions or being a little distracted. You make a dumb, careless mistake you'd otherwise make. We've all done it. You see it right there on a baseball field and it's there in front of spectators. And a lot of us don't do it in front of spectators or listeners. And I understand it. So my belief is there's another aspect to this that maybe given some time, or maybe, you know, if David Russ wanted to confide in somebody, say, yeah, he wasn't really thinking out there, because that's one of the smartest guys in your team. That's the guy who always understands score and situation. And when someone like Nico Hoerner drops a looping line drive on purpose to try to get a double play, and then afterward he said, oh yeah, it was Javi who told me. He was saying, drop it. Like, he's usually a step ahead of everyone. So I get it. And I think it's well handled. I think it's good managing. 312-644-6767. I don't want to make too much out of it, but it's always, it's a story when that happens. And you see a guy like that who is one of your team leaders removed, and you have the opposing TV call or whatever. So, oh, the magician turned one out into two. We're making fun of his nickname. Oh, magic there. I get it. High profile guy. And you don't do that. And I don't, some managers could make themselves the center of the story. And I thought David Ross did a good job not doing that. Where it's like, this is how we do things here. And almost like what Tony La Russa did with your meme Mercedes, where that's the sort of the old school way of doing it, is you huff and you puff and you announce your presence with authority and announce your authority with a presence. But he didn't. That was all right, come here. Not your night. Let's sit down. And I know they say it doesn't make an example of him, but you're supposed to. Guys, they see that. They know it. They remember it. And if it keeps their head in the game a little bit more, I know it's not a high school team. I know it's not a little league team. But these guys have the fact that a manager does have this authority and is entrusted to do it. I think players want that at that level. I don't think that they want to have their, you know, see their star players like, wow, I guess he got away with something and I couldn't have gotten away with that. Or you enforce the rules equally. And you end up with a team that pays attention. So good on Ross for that. It just, we're not talking about the fact that the Cubs can't score. You know, that's really, if this is their problem, then it would be fine. But this isn't their problem. The problem is the offense is broken again. The problem is they can't hit. And the problem is all of their reliance on extra helping hands coming up and overachieving. After a while, that doesn't work anymore. And you start to see what happens when all of your big guns have been carrying you are not doing what they've been doing, and things start to drop off. So, yeah, it is. They are really lucky to still be tied for first place in the NL Central with the Brewers, and this is what we thought would happen, right? We thought that this division would kind of settle sort of the way it has. And it has. This has been almost playing out exactly as we thought. And I don't know how it affects the decisions that they're going to make right now. I don't know whether or not what kind of team Jed Hoyer sees. I just, as I mentioned yesterday, with everything that's happening with the baseball, with everything that's happening with sticky stuff and not knowing who actually is what, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you decide what value a guy has right now. Meanwhile, I wanted to give you this number and tell me who you think this player is. This player, the slash line, is a batting average of 123, on base of 219, and slugging 193. It's an OPS of 412. And it's a weighted runs created plus of 22. That is Chris Bryant in June, ladies and gentlemen. And that is horrendous. The drop-off of this team's offense in large part has correlated to the absolute disappearance of Chris Bryant in the last 22 days. He has ceased to be. and you comp that, his March-April slash line, 322, 412, 667. His May, 327, 400, 561. His WRC plus in March and April, 189. His WRC plus in May, 162. His WRC plus in June, 22. You want to start to worry about something. It's not a Javier Baez brain fart. It is that Chris Bryant's plug got pulled. Over the last 3 weeks, he has essentially been a zero offensively. He has literally accounted for two weighted runs created in 22 days. Two. Slugging 193. I don't know what's happened. His strikeout percentage is up. His strikeout percentage in March and April, 22.5. In May, was down to 21.8. It is up to 26.6% this month. Pitchers figured something out. Chris Bryant made an adjustment to an adjustment, and the pitchers are making an adjustment to an adjustment. And we'll see if not having grip enhancements help them. But you want to see real, I mean, absolute alarm bells. The Chris Bryant June is terrifying. And if that continues, for that affects a lot of things. Because as a trade piece, or what Scott Boras is talking about as far as any extension talks, you know, you got to decide, again, that's 3 weeks. That's not one bad week. We're going on a whole month here of a dreadful slump that he's in. And let's look at this closely. Let's examine it. Let's figure out what's real here as they start to see what they can do. You want to give us a call? You can. 312-644-6767. The Bernstein Rahimi Show. I'm Dan Bernstein, solo for the week. Tomorrow, of course, there's the Radiothon. But then Thursday and Friday, I'm in as well while Layla takes some much-deserved time off. When we come back, let's hear Javier Baez's side of the benching. Talk about that. Continue to talk about Bryant and get your Cubs thoughts ahead of Craig Calcaterra. Talking baseball at 10 o'clock here on Sports Radio 670 WSCR. The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Morning Show.
Mully
and Hall here.
We're with you every morning on your way to work, live at 5.
We've got the day's biggest Chicago sports stories to start your day off right.
Mully and Hall, mornings 5 to 9 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And on your device or smart speaker through the Odyssey app.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
1-0 Indians, bottom of the fourth, one away, Baez not running. Rizzo hits one in the air to left field and deep. Back goes Rosario with a play. And Baez thought it's the third out in the inning. It's only the second out, and Baez is going to be doubled up at first. So Baez did not know how many outs there were. He ends up over near third base. Rizzo's fly ball caught by Eddie Rosario in left, and it becomes a double play. Base running mistake.
Cleveland on top of the Cubs, 1-0 as we get set for the top half of the fifth inning. And the Cubs have made a change. Javier Baez has been taken out of the ballgame, and Sergio Alcantara is the new shortstop. After Baez was doubled off, he did not know how many outs were left in the fourth.
That's no good. You can't do that. And it's both not a big deal and a big deal. And in the bigger picture, it's really, it's not. You do what you got to do. You're put in that situation as manager, and you take him out. You also can take him out because maybe you know other reasons why his head's not there and it's just not his night, and you'd rather have somebody who's a little less distracted and more able to concentrate on what's actually going on as he goes about his job. So I get it, and I do think it was well handled. We heard what David Ross said, and now let's hear what Javier Baez had to say about what happened.
Honestly, lost the outs. You know, I had the whole time that it was like 2 outs, and that's obviously what just happened. It was only 1 out, and you know, Tony flew out to left field, and I ran like it was 2 outs. It wasn't like I wasn't doing something I wasn't supposed to do. I just respect his decision. I couldn't go against him. You know, I blame it on myself. I lost the count of the outs, and. You know, we talk about it. We in the same page, and you know, I'll be there tomorrow to help. You know, he saw one thing. I saw another thing, and he just took me out of the game. You know, like like I say, there's no hard feelings right now. And we talk after, right after the game. We are in the same page right now. I didn't like I got taken out of the lineup, and you know, obviously Serge was not completely ready, which is what I didn't like. But you know, things happens against, you know, between brothers, teammates, and managers. It happens, and we obviously try to be in the same page and try to help the team as much as we can.
Well said. Sometimes it's not your night. Guys come out of games. Even star players, immensely talented players, come out of games. Sometimes it's a bad matchup, or sometimes you're just not right. And unfortunately, there's just too many Cubs not hitting. And you gotta field a team. I mean, you gotta have guys out there. But you know, Jason Hayward's been awful. Ian Happ hasn't been hitting. I read you Bryant's numbers. There's only so many guys you got to play, and they've just got to start hitting. You know, we were looking into some of the Bryant stuff. Jay Zawoski was delving into some of the heat map stuff, and it's often a function of the pitches that you're seeing, but the only stuff he's hitting is, it looks like, mistakes. Like when, you know, you're talking fastballs middle, and they're, again, trying to work him around, work that swing around in areas where he can't do damage. And that's baseball now, man. Once the pitchers get an angle on you, it does not take them long to figure out what not to throw you.
If you look at his heat map, the only red area is middle of the plate and low and outside. So if you were to envision him swinging, it would be the path of an uppercut swing, which we knew going into this year he was trying to minimize. He was trying to swing down in his offseason work to eliminate that uppercut swing. Well, it looks like it's back. Because up high in the zone, it's really dark blue. The only red at all, and it's more pink than red, is low and outside.
And he kept saying that he was trying to start with his hands higher to make sure he feels like his hands are the top defining line of his strike zone, that he feels that he can read that anything that is up there, what he feels isn't close to his hands, he knows he's not going to swing at. So I'd have to – this is like why I really miss when Jeff Sullivan – left FanGraphs, because this would be exactly the kind of thing where Jeff Sullivan would publish a FanGraphs piece with side-by-side video and overlays of here's the pitches he was hitting and here is what's happening to him now. And I don't have the video wherewithal to go back and do some of that stuff, but that's now that he works for the Tampa Bay Rays, we don't get the benefit of it, and the Tampa Bay Rays get the benefit of it instead. But yeah, I mean, it's there in the results, and it's obviously there in the numbers, but the Cubs are, you know, occasionally they'll hit a home run, and that's the runs that they get. They're not stringing these positive outcomes together. And I don't know. I don't know what Jed thinks about where this is all headed, because they certainly, as currently constructed, don't look like a World Series champ. They've done a lot of really good things. They're a first-place team. Don't get me wrong. And I'll say the same thing the way the White Sox are right now, until they get some pieces back. And how they've been piecing things together, I think the Sox are better. But if you're really being honest about what you're seeing, when you do see these teams with deep pitching staffs and prepared throughout with a fully stocked circle of trust in their high leverage bullpen, their even or ahead guys, however you want to put it, you can you hate white flagging it, but you can see logic in it. I don't think they're going to. I think we've moved to a point where it's really not sort of done in the same way. It takes a lot of guts. It takes a lot of trust in your fans understanding what you're doing, that even if it's the prudent business decision, it is a really hard sell, especially now welcoming fans back, talking about how important it is to have people in the building and how important your game day revenues are. If you start sending the message, yeah, we're kind of cashed in this season, It flies in the face of everything that you're doing, and it ends up being somewhat discordant, even if every reasonable, logical argument is there to say we can't just walk this thing into one round of playoffs and then lose everybody for nothing, because that's just not smart. And it's not, they may end up doing it. This may be the no good deed goes unpunished, that they may end up, because they're good enough and because they've been able to plug so many holes and stay above water and stay in first place, even though it doesn't feel like they are the way that they're playing, that ends up getting them further from a championship, in that sort of sense of irony. That could be what we're watching. I'm Dan Bernstein, and this is Sports Radio 670. It's the Bernstein Rahimi Show. 312-644-6767. I thought that the rollout of the inspections was okay. I mean, obviously people are paying really close attention to it. I think it's going to recede into the background. It's just going to kind of become part of the game. It didn't, nothing really jumped out at me. I don't know if game times were lengthened at all, if we have enough of a sample of games to determine that, but we'll see. And even there's obviously mandatory checks at some point when everybody comes in. At some point, every starter is going to get looked at. What I hope is that umpires don't settle into a routine of timing where the truly dedicated, inspired cheaters will know exactly when to go load up on something because, oh, well, okay, that was, it was like, do you remember the shorts measuring? Do you remember in the NBA when David Stern was cracking down on shorts being too long? That was hilarious.
Really? Man. When did that happen?
Oh, what year? It was late 90s. I had just started on the beat and these shorts have gotten entirely too long. That's when they were airbrushing off neck tats and all this stuff. And they were really concerned about their image and they would measure. It was like the Taliban beard measurers, but they would come out and measure the guy's shorts. And I remember I was talking with Allen Iverson before the game, and I said, "Yeah." First of all, I was going to say, "You're only like 5'9", aren't you?" But I said, "Your shorts have those cannot be up to code." He's like, "I know." So you know your shorts are too long. He's like, "Yeah." Well, it's like I'm going to roll them up. And I roll them up. I flip the waistband over, and then they measure them, and then I flip the waistband back, and I go play. Like, okay, that's pretty cool. And I look over, I think it was Rick Mahorn. You look over, Rick Mahorn is sitting there like going over his mail and drinking coffee. He seemed like he was 50 years old. And he just kind of shakes his head. He's like, I don't know, man. These kids today, like whatever they want to do. But I think that's what happens is if they settle in, some pitcher will be like, okay, now you check me. And now I can go get my spider tack and you can hear the ball ripping off my hand like it's a Band-Aid being pulled off. So the surprise checkpoints, I think, is going to be what they're going to have here to keep guys honest. So and then there will be some other thing that's invisible that they'll find because there always is. I guarantee you somebody's on to the next undetectable thing because it's completely clear and you can't see it on the ball. Somebody is developing it because there's opportunity in that, an opportunity to make money and stay ahead of the game. But that is I know somehow baseball will find a way to make this weird. They'll find a way to screw it up. They'll find a way to have some sort of injustice or miscarriage of justice built into this. Do you see Angel Hernandez in the pouring rain? Like it's pouring buckets and they're out there trying to look for pine tar on a guy's fingers. I don't know.
That is a flat out absolute disgrace.
Yeah, he has a hard enough time determining what a strike is. And what an out is.
And then if you check the score, too, it was like 10-0.
It's 10-0. It's pouring. And he's out there, I don't know. You have something sticky on your finger. Isn't everybody just absolutely soaked to the bone? Here is Rusty in Dubuque on the score. Hello, Rusty.
How you doing?
Okay.
I don't understand why they're going to all this length to find the source of whatever they're putting on the ball. The rule has always just been if there's something on the ball, you throw out the pitcher, and you don't have to really worry about where it came from. And given the fact of how quickly they're getting balls in and out of games, like rarely does a baseball last even one at bat, that if there's something on the ball, just assume guilt and throw the pitcher out. I mean, I don't know why they're turning this into such a project when that just seems like the simplest solution.
Well, because sometimes the stuff itself is on the guy's finger and not necessarily staying on the ball.
Okay. I mean, I guess that would answer it, right? If somehow it doesn't show up on the ball, it you know what I mean? It's a substance that you get the advantage of it and somehow it disappears before the ball ends up in the catcher's net, I guess that answers the question.
But the truth is, Rusty, they are doing what you're saying. They are. If there is something on the ball, they will go out there. They don't have to then go necessarily forensically trace it back to where it is on the pitcher. There can be that presumption of guilt that you're talking about. And if there is something on there that shouldn't be on there, they can do that. And that goes to position players, too. If they say, well, this guy, we trace back the chain of custody to this ball going here, and he had it, and then he gave it to the pitcher, it's the pitcher who pays the price. The pitcher has control over whether or not that's the ball that he uses. And whoever is loading it up, it's that player and the pitcher who does bear the weight of that responsibility. So if you read the memo, they've got a wide latitude of enforcement power. Like, there's the regular checking of guys, but if there is suspicion, they can check as many times as they want, as many guys as they want, and anything that they think looks out of the ordinary allows them to go check multiple people for it. But we'll see what the level of suspicion is. I don't know if you're going to have an umpire like see a ball cut ridiculously or see it move ridiculously, because they're not, I don't think in a game the ump has access to spin data. I don't think he's going to say, well, his curveball just jumped 500 RPM or whatever the threshold might be to trigger some sort of warning. I don't think they're doing that. I guess they could, right? I mean, you can monitor that real time. You can have somebody sitting just watching Baseball Savant and telling the umpire in between innings, you know, by the way, that guy's curveball is unnatural for him based on his baseline numbers, so you might want to go out and give him a look. I think they could do that if they wanted.
Every stadium could put it up on one of their video boards, no? Couldn't you put spin rate after every pitch, or is it not tracked as quickly?
I don't know how quickly that data is processed. I haven't thought about that in real time. I usually follow somebody like Sarah Langs or one of the other Twitter feeds that has some of that, but I have never really actually in real time looked at Baseball Savant while watching a game to see how quickly that's available.
Because I'm curious, like how would umpires be able to tell by certain pitches? I guess you could go in between innings and check it, but like in real time, you would be able to look up, same way you're able to see miles per hour. You can also see spin rate. If you see something jump, maybe it allows umpires to go out there and say, hey, what's going on here? But I don't know.
I would think that anything at their disposal would be cool, because based on just how broadly these powers are being interpreted, nothing seems to have been ruled out at this point. We will talk baseball with one of our favorite baseball guests, who joins us every Tuesday at 10 o'clock, the author of the Cup of Coffee newsletter, which is an absolute must to start your baseball day. Craig Calcaterra joins us next on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.